Welcome to the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy. This is the place for everything related to Amazon private label and e-commerce. Learn exactly what you need to start or scale your business. Get insights from the top industry experts who will discuss the latest trends and best practices in the world of Amazon. From choosing products and sourcing from a supplier to setting up your Amazon account and marketing your business, you will hear it here. Let's get started. Here is your host, Vincenzo Toscano.
Hello, guys. Welcome to another episode of the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy, the place of everything related to Amazon FBA private label and e-commerce. My name is Vincenzo Toscano, founder and CEO of eComsy. And today we bring you another special guest. His name is Caleb Ofton, and he's the founder and CEO of E-Commerce Wizards, which is one of the communities out there that specialize on everything regarding Shopify, right? And this is a very interesting topic for me because we know we Amazon sellers, especially in 2024, are looking for new ways to drive revenue to our business. And Shopify is usually the first, stop we want to do as founders of an Amazon brand, because we know the power of having a D2C brand and basically owning your consumers and basically have control in terms of the whole journey. But at the same time, let's be honest, it's not easy, especially when you come from a platform such as Amazon, that Amazon does everything for you. So that's why I wanted to bring Caleb today, because he has a lot of experience as well when it comes to conversion, which is basically number one thing you need to master when you have your own Shopify store. And I'm sure you guys are going to find a lot of insights when it comes to that. So Caleb, it's a pleasure to have you here on the show, my friend. How you doing?
I'm doing excellent, Vincenzo. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. I know right now you are in Australia, so I'm sure you're going to have much better weather than myself here in London. Here in London, as of 2 days, it was pretty much dropping ice from the sky, 6 degrees, so I'm very jealous.
Yeah, no, it's 26 here today, man. I turned the aircon on, and it's autumn.
That's good. Awesome, Caleb. So let's talk a little bit about you, because you have a very interesting background. You managed to do, multiple figure brands when it comes to Shopify. I'm sure you learned a lot throughout that journey. So tell me a little bit about, first of all, why you started your journey when it comes to Shopify. What made you basically be here right now with your community? Yeah.
Sure. When I was really young, I got into computers. Like, I just got into programming, built a computer when I was 10 years old using spare parts. Taught myself quick basic. Like, I was just always a data kind of nerd. I ended up working at a few telcos in New Zealand. And then when I came over to Australia, I was working at Optus, which is a big national telco. I was really bored. And so I decided to start a business, and I went into hypnosis because I knew a little bit about NLP, and I started researching. I thought this was super interesting. If we can use language to program computers, maybe we can use language to program ourselves. So I spent 40, 50, 60 grand on hypnosis trainings, started a practice, and realized I knew absolutely nothing about marketing, which makes it really hard to run a business.
It's a bummer, yeah.
So I was like, okay, clearly I need to learn marketing. So I looked for like the best marketing courses at the time, and Facebook marketing was just sort of becoming a thing. It was all affiliate marketing. So I did a course on affiliate marketing, and I went, oh, wow, this is really interesting. I can put money and copy and images in, and I can get data out. This is really, really interesting. Let's do more of this. And through an interesting series of ads that was served to me, I ended up joining a e-commerce mastermind. And I was like, all right, I think this is what I want to do. And I flew to Hawaii. I did a mastermind event. I got my funnel live during the three-day event. I got my first client a couple weeks later, I think 2 weeks later. Yeah. And from that point, I was running ads for coaches, real estate agents. And then I got an e-commerce business that was selling eye cream. And it was my first 10K client. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And I did really well with the ads. And I was like, I'm getting really good click-through rates, but the revenue is not going up. What's going on? And so I started looking at the website, and I was like, can we make some changes? Yeah. I just I want to make some changes. And the guy was running ClickFunnels. He's like, yeah, sure, whatever. Like, we'll test your ideas. And I'm like, cool. So we test my ideas, and he goes from a 1.4x ROAS, which was already up from his 0.7 when he came to me, to a 2.4 in like a week after rolling this change out. And I was like, oh, there's something here. And I just got super obsessed, and I started researching. And it wasn't until a few years later that I found out this had a name that was conversion optimization. And I just started specializing more and more with e-commerce, because it's a lot easier to do conversion rate optimization with e-commerce. It's not that you can't do it for a service-based business, and I have for many, including solar, which is crazy. But it's easier with e-commerce. And so that's really the 60,000-foot view of how I got into it. During that journey, as you mentioned, I merged my agency with an agency we took that from 0 to 7 figures in 90 days, which is something I would never recommend. Having done it, I would never recommend it. And my business partner in e-commerce was Mark Lindsay. He's an old school Google Ads guy. He's done something very similar. He took a business from $30,000 a month to $3 million a month in 8 months, and he said the same thing, would never recommend it. People love the idea of growth. I mean, even just doubling. One of my best case studies was a small manufacturer of metal art in, I want to say California, but I don't think they were in California. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, we want to hit 2 mil a year. And they were doing 50K a month when they came to me. And I was like, okay, cool. The next month we did 120K, and they said, slow down. Slow down. We're not ready.
It's funny.
We're not really. Yeah. Please slow down. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, actually, because I feel when you have a business, we have this fixed mindset that the only thing really that you have to do as a business is just keep growing and keep growing and keep growing. But to be honest, and it happened to me as well sometimes, you realize that sometimes growth is not what you're actually looking. Sometimes it's other things. It's like the lifestyle you can have, the flexibility around certain decision making, and also you don't want your passion to become so big to a point that becomes a jail to you, right? It happens when the business grows very fast in a short period of time. So yeah, it's interesting that you bring that to the table, because I feel, especially in e-commerce, the only thing people talk about is scale, scale, scale. But I know a lot of people that did that, and now they're actually super unhappy, because they are at a stage right now that, yes, they're making a ton of money, but then it's like, I don't even have time to spend the money. So what's the point?
Yeah, and there's scaling breaks things.
Yeah,
you know, it's one of the things on is what's going to be the next thing to break? Because if you know, and this is where experience is super useful, if you know what the next thing that's likely to break is, you're scaling. If you start at 20K and you get to 50, 80K a month, generally speaking, that's really just optimizing your messaging, how you go out to the market, and stabilizing fulfillment. That's really all that is at the end of the day.
Yeah.
If you want to go from 80 to 150, 250K a month, there's a whole new set of problems. You know, customer service becomes a real issue at that point. Even if you have a very low return rate, it's still something you need to look at. Fulfillment can also become a real challenge at that point. That's when people seriously need to consider 3PLs. And that introduces new costs. So if your margin's not there, now you have this cascading issue. You're selling more products, but your margin's lower, so you don't have the money to invest. And now you're spiraling, going,
it's a cash flow game.
Why did I want to do this?
Yeah. It's difficult. It's difficult. I know. And just to conclude this point, I feel as you grow as well, especially with, for example, Amazon, in this analogy, like the bigger you get, the more money you have tied to inventory. And that's also a huge risk. Like, yeah, you could be making 5-10 million, but then you have 7-figure in terms of tight end inventory, that if your Amazon store gets suspended or something goes wrong or whatever, that's a huge cash flow that is basically tied to that. So you have to be careful, essentially. Now, diverting a little bit back to Shopify, because I think that's where I want to put the focus on today, which is in terms of what are some of the elements that make a Shopify store successful. I think one of the number one things that we agree on and was the basically the foundation of our conversation is basically how we master conversion, right? Because I feel you can have an amazing product, but if all the traffic you send to your Shopify store is actually not converting to a respectable rate, it's going to be very difficult for you to have a good ROAS, essentially, right? So let's talk about high level, of course. What are some of the foundational pillars usually you like to take in consideration to basically optimize that conversion on a store? Yeah,
yeah, for sure. A long time ago, I had my former business partner help me actually articulate this. There's 10 things that I consider to be conversion killers. And I phrased them as conversion killers because at the time it was sort of the marketing angle that we were going for around the things that are killing your conversion rate. Obviously, if you do these things right, they actually bring life to your conversions. So
yeah,
trust is probably one of the biggest things. Load speed is a massive one. It's much less of an issue these days, especially with Shopify 2.0. A lot of those themes come out of the box pretty darn fast. That being said, if you put 50 apps on your store, it's kind of like WordPress, that, you know, some of them have their own versions of jQuery, and that makes everything super slow. So you do want to be aware of it. Google's got a lot of really great research about load speed, so it's not something I tend to talk that much about. It's just, it's a really proven thing. For most markets, there are exceptions. The faster, the better. Yeah. And I have a funny story about halving the load speed on the site and it actually making the conversion rate worse. So it really isn't. There's no panacea. There's no one thing that's going to work.
It's a psychology sometimes. I know that if from a fag, maybe you can come from this. Some websites on purpose on certain stages, they make it slower because of the anticipation that you build inside of you to take an action. So there's some strategy.
I think it's, you know, it really depends on the audience and the sales mechanisms that have been used. Branding's really important. I'm shocked at the number of even high revenue stores, I'm talking 250K a month plus, that have inconsistent branding. You wouldn't think that's the case, but it is. I've seen stores doing $1 million a month that have inconsistent button colors. I'm looking through their checkout process and I'm going, the add to cart button was one color. That took me to a cart page that had a different color checkout button. And then when I land on the checkout, it's another color to like complete the purchase. Cool. And this may seem like it's a small thing, but these are all micro commitments. They're micro decisions that you're forcing your user to have to make rather than relying on consistency, which is much easier to do. Clicks to objective is another one. Remove as many unnecessary steps as possible to the checkout. There's a reason Amazon kicks ass with one click purchase. Like,
buy
that
now.
Thing's dangerous, man. That's dangerous.
Yeah.
Options like Shop that do make it much more viable, but it's still, you know, it was only earlier this year, I think, or late last year, that standard Shopify users got access to a one-page checkout just as part of Shopify. So there's still a long way to go in that regard. There are other things, but from a really high level, trust, quality content, and just really understanding. I was on another podcast and the host summarized what I was saying as empathy. And I was like, actually, that's a really good way of saying it. Having empathy for your audience, the people you're serving, don't underestimate that. Whether you just have an empathy map or a 20-page customer persona, there's immense value in actually understanding what drives your audience to purchase. And that's where I get a lot of my ideas for testing from, is I try and put myself in the mind of the customer as much as I can. All that hypnosis training I mentioned, it pays off when I come to like put myself in the customer's mindset, and it takes me like 20 seconds and I'm like, okay, this is probably what their pain points are. This is probably what they're doing. If I look at the page from this point of view, it doesn't make any sense. That might be why there's a 0.5% conversion rate.
Yeah. Super important.
Let's do something to fix it.
Which I think brings down the next thing, which is you mentioned there's split testing, and I feel that's something unfortunately people don't do very often, or they don't even know how to properly do it, because let's be honest, sometimes it's difficult to track a proper split testing, because if you start testing multiple things, then it's difficult to really drive a conclusion about what is driving the growth in terms of conversion, for example, for your website. So now, from that perspective, when you start trying to basically figure out on your Shopify store what some of the things that drive your conversion, what is usually the timeline you give yourself to optimize this? Because some people might come from, for example, from the Amazon space, and usually they have the mindset that this is something you do once or twice and you set and forget. But by talking to multiple people who do Shopify, it feels like this is a never-ending process. So what is usually the methodology you advise to, you know, getting started, and how often you will split testing, Sarah? Yeah.
Always be testing.
Yeah.
Mark and I are working on a product, a front-end product for our e-commerce wizards. And I was just working on the copy yesterday for the offer page. And I just did a quick calculation in a sheet. If you start with $20,000 a month revenue, let's say you on average get a 5% increase in your conversion rate, which isn't that much. Like, I've run tests that have had 60% increases, 40% increases. Yeah. Like, it's not crazy, especially if you've got a low conversion rate. So $20,000 a month, start with a 2% conversion rate, which is industry average, apparently, according to a bunch of different research. You run one experiment, cool, $21,000 and is your ongoing from that point onwards, right? You run 32 experiments over, let's say, the following 2 years, $90,000+ in revenue. And that's assuming you're not, that's assuming an average win rate of 5%. That's not assuming you've increased your ad spend. That's not assuming you've done anything on the back end to increase AOV, lifetime value, repeat customers, which we all know convert at a higher rate anyway. That is pure just conversion rate math because of how it compounds. So always be testing. You know, if you don't have an experiment up, you'll get one up. But you made a really good point about tracking, because it is really difficult. And if you don't test in isolation as best you can, and this is even a challenge sometimes with the tests we suggest, because I always recommend do confidence marks. A lot of people don't do confidence marks between the product title and the add to cart. Well, what do you do for those? I recommend a minimum of 3, a maximum of 5. Cool. Which 3? You're going to have to test that. And the only way to test that is to pick 3, see if that increases it. If it does, great. Change one of them. See what that does. It's really, you get to be a scientist. You get to like discover what is actually going to cause an impact for your audience. And you get, and this is why I said, if you know more about your audience, it's a lot easier to do this. If you know that you serve yoga moms that have 2 kids under the age of 3, saying that they're resistant to, you know, vomit, might actually be a selling point, because there's a high probability they might get spewed up on, especially if they're still breastfeeding, right? Like, that's a thing that they have to deal with.
Yeah, and that's actually, it brings to a point that I feel, and maybe you can come from this as well, like from the experience that you basically outlining as a methodology, it seems like before you even do any kind of split testing or try to improve your conversion, like, you really need to have a brief in depth about how your avatar looks like in terms of behavior, age range, gender, and all that, which I feel you will be surprised, but most people don't have that. They don't really understand the audience in depth. It feels like if you're trying to do some split testing, and it makes sense now that you break it down like this, if you don't really understand what is the actual avatar that you're targeting, they're looking to get in terms of specifics, are you even going to test certain elements in the first place? Because you don't even know what elements to actually convey to communicate that message, you know? I have empathy, as you mentioned, essentially.
100%. I have an unusually high success rate with my experiments, and I think it's largely due to the fact that I actually take the time to do the research, to understand, to ask annoying questions to business owners, mm-hmm. and to press them until I get an answer. And I'm in the process of shutting down my marketing agency at the moment, just to focus exclusively on e-commerce wizards full time. But one of the things that we did is we wouldn't actually take on a client if they didn't have least basic segmentation for their audiences, and that meant often we would run a workshop before we would run any experiments, so that we could extract from them and their marketing team, because sometimes the business owner doesn't know who the actual customers are. And it shocked me. Oh, we had something that was done for us by a marketing agency 3 years ago. Cool. Have you tested it? No. Okay, can we run a survey to your email list? Sure. We run a survey. Turns out some of those avatars aren't at all part of the email list, so they're probably not part of the marketing. And if they are, they're not being served properly because they're not even opting into the email. And there's an entire audience that's not on that list. That makes up 25% of the email list. It's like, no wonder you guys are having issues. You don't even know who you're talking to.
Yeah, very tough. Yeah, which I think brings me, I mean, of course, we're talking about avatar and everything, but something I feel some people struggle as well. First of all, that they don't have the proper audience segmentated. But even if they do, and that's why people like you, you know, it basically exists and can provide that support, they don't know what elements to test. We've been talking about elements and of that and things to split test, but in terms of that, like, it could be so many things. It could be a button, it could be the title, it could be the font, it could be the size of the logo. And I think sometimes can get overwhelming because you don't even know where to start from that perspective. So I guess what I'm trying to get with this intro about that is, like, when you start doing a split testing to find out how you can improve your conversions, what are some of the elements that you have found from experience usually move the needle the most? So maybe it could be like, buttons on the checkout are the things that usually make the most of the difference, or usually the font, because just to give you an example, on Amazon usually is the main image, right? The main image is usually what makes provides the biggest change. So on a Shopify store, what do you think is usually some of those elements that you see moving the resource the fastest, essentially?
There are some common ones. Mm-hmm. Anything that attracts the user's attention generally warrants a look. But what I'll say is this can vary widely depending on niche, theme, like the actual layout of the store. The design of the theme can make a big difference to what you want to test, and obviously audience as well. But I encourage everyone to install some sort of heat mapping and screen mm-hmm. recording software. I don't have a particular preference. There's many good options out there, just something so that you can actually go and look at what people are actually paying attention to. Because then you can make an informed decision. I could say, you know, make sure that you've got, say, payment icons, which is a very common one, that are visible above the fold. Now, where they go might change depending on your audience or your layout or a number of other factors, but generally they make a positive impact. Recently, in two different examples for our members, that was not the case. And I was a little annoyed, but that happens. And I would rather go with the data than my personal feelings, because my feelings don't matter at the end of the day, then increasing their revenue does. So you learn and you take notes. So when you come up with a theory, when you want to, let's say you install some heat map stuff and you go, oh, it looks like people click my logo a whole heap, and they actually click my logo more than they click my add to cart button. That's really interesting. Maybe I should change the size of that. That's called a hypothesis. Write that down. Mm-hmm. When you go to run the experiment and you change the size of the logo, in most software, there's a place to write notes. Some of them even prompt you for what your hypothesis is and what the expected outcome is. Write it down, because then you have a log of these things. And when you go back in 6 months' time and you go, why did I make that change? You'll be able to reference it, and you'll be able to tie your idea to the outcome.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, that's actually a big thing because, and I like the way that you mentioned writing that hypothesis because at the end of the day, you're doing that. It's just an assumption based on some data points. But at the end of the day, if you don't create an experiment, it could be just from the perception how you see things, but it's not really how people are behaving. And then the other thing that I feel I want to build on top of this point when it comes to building up a hypothesis is like how you actually make sure from that perspective, just out of curiosity, when you build this hypothesis, like these are things that could be done that could be also influenced by, for example, seasonality, right? Because I'm sure seasonality is also plays a big thing. Like if you do experiments during specific times of the year, people behave differently or if you're doing a promotion somewhere, people behave with more urgency. So are those things that you also try to isolate to some extent to make sure they don't affect the results?
Sometimes it's really difficult. Like any experiments that I run in Q4, I generally earmark them in some way, shape, or form as Q4. Like you can put candy canes or gift boxes on as the icon on your add to cart button. And in Q4, there's a good chance you'll get a bit of a bump. It might only be 4%, but it could be 12. Mm-hmm. You don't know. Mm-hmm. So test that. But don't assume that's going to work in February.
Unless you sell things for Valentine's Day, maybe.
Well, and you know, again, maybe, right? But test it and test it in context. Keep the context in mind. We ran an experiment recently for a private client, and at the time the experiment was a great idea. We ran into some issues with the software. By the time we got the actual experiment live, who we were targeting had completely changed. And so the experiment had a negative 40% impact.
Wow.
And we went, that's not great. But so we stopped it, right? But then the in looking at what was going on, looking at the messaging from the ad, looking at what was happening on the product page, it's like, oh, we're putting them off. And we're putting them off really strongly, which means they care. Mm-hmm. They care that's enough for that to be a problem. So there's probably a positive increase of 40% available if we can figure out how to communicate the opposite of what we've done here. Mm-hmm. And so even when you lose, you can win if you're tracking these things, if you're paying attention to what's going on. What's my communication in the ads? What's my messaging? Am I losing the scent? Have I tracked what my theory was? Does everything line up? If there's, you know, if it doesn't line up, that's fine. You can use that to go, what can I learn? What can I test instead? What's the opposite of this? Yeah. And it may not be something you expect.
Yeah. And I guess now to start concluding, some questions might ask themselves, okay, of course, I'm going to keep doing split testing, try to improve conversions here and there. But when you make the decision or the conclusion that sometimes the fundamental issue is the offer, is the product, is there is not enough demand, or it's actually an actual issue that why you bring it to market, you know, it's actually not conveying a solution that is convincing enough for them to actually make a purchase, because sometimes that could be the issue, is the product, is the offer that you could do as many split testing as you want, but unfortunately, you know, the market is just not there. Are there scenarios where you encounter, you know what, we have done split testing here and there, and sometimes the issue is the offer, like how you make that call as well? If you see what I mean.
That's a really good question. So generally we say you want to have at least 10,000 sessions a month. You want to be spending a minimum of $4,000 to $5,000 a month on ad spend. So who we work with generally have a proven offer. If you're coming from Amazon and you're doing a couple million a year on Amazon, you have a proven product. The question is, do you know how to communicate that to platform audiences? Right. And so if you're transitioning, which I've worked with stores that have transitioned from Amazon to Shopify, that is often the biggest challenge is figuring out how to communicate that product market fit to a non-search intent audience. Mm-hmm. And so you can start with Google search, for example, because that's still search intent, and you can take a lot of the SEO you do on Amazon and apply that strategy. Right. Like it's somewhat transferable. If you try and do that with Meta ads,
no.
you might have some mixed results and you might end up spending more than you would like to acquire a customer to start with.
Yeah.
If you don't have the traffic, it's really hard to do split tests. And generally speaking, you won't have the traffic if you haven't proved the product yet. Generally speaking, if you're one of these people who's been, you know, inherited 100K and you've paid someone $5,000 to set up a website for you, and now you're ready to run ads and you want, you know, your initial ads show that your conversion rate's 0.02%. Yeah. Okay. It could be the conversion rate. It could also be the ads. And these things go hand in hand, but that's why we teach the same, like, this is a mentality. You can do the same thing with ads. You can test ads in isolation. You can test messaging in isolation. You can test products in isolation, and you can do that quite rapidly if you understand how the platform works. But I'm talking about Meta specifically here. But if I ran, say, half a dozen tests and the conversion rate was, let's say, 0.5%, and I ran 6 experiments and nothing was making a dent, right? I would be wondering what's going on. I would be going, okay. In fact, probably after 3, I'd be wondering what the hell's going on. Because I've got 3 go-to tests. Normally one of them gives a lift. If those don't work, I want to know why. Like, I stop and I start looking at the marketing. I start looking, do we have enough flows? Mm. Like, how much traffic are we actually getting?
Yeah.
What's the quality of the traffic? Are we getting opt-ins? Like, even are we just getting newsletter opt-ins? Do we have a pop-up? Yeah. Like, are people interested in this? Is where I start. And I get super curious. So if I was running into that, I would say it's time to get curious, get really, really curious.
That's a very good way to put it. Awesome. So, I mean, Caleb, thank you so much for all your knowledge and sharing all your wisdom when it comes to Shopify. I'm sure all our listeners that are doing that transition now are going to find that, you know, very insightful. So for those that, you know, maybe want to work with you and learn more about your community and everything, how people can find you and get a reach of you.
Yeah, so it's rather easy to find me on Facebook. I have a public page as well as my personal page, but if you just search for my name, I generally show up. I think my icon at the moment is a picture of me getting a photograph or something like that, or LinkedIn. But you can find e-commerce wizards, e-commercewizards.club, not .com, .club. And on there, you'll actually see there's a mailing list or email list for the next free challenge that we're running. So every now and then we run free 7-day challenges. The last one we ran was in February. One of the participants, this is completely free. So we run you through how to get the software set up, what your first experiment should be. You get your first experiment live. One of the participants ended up getting a 43% increase from this free challenge.
Wow.
So that's generally what I suggest people do. I'm a big fan of try before you buy, and this is a great way for you to get to know myself and Mark better and to see what we actually do and if it's going to work for you, because it's not for everyone. Some people don't want to listen. They don't want to test. They just want to be told what to do, or they, you know, whatever the case is. So try before you buy, and this is a great way to do it.
Awesome, Caleb. So thank you so much for being the show. It's been a pleasure. Yes, for everybody that wants to find Caleb information, I'm going to leave it down here in the description. And in the meantime, I want to, thank you for your time. So it's been a pleasure, and see you in the next one. Yeah, thank you so much. Bye.
Thanks for listening to The E-Commerce Lab by Ecomsy. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. While you are at it, we would appreciate it if you could leave an honest rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. That will make it easier for others to find out about the show and benefit from it. Want more? Visit our website at www.ecomsy.com, where you can get your first consultation for free. Or find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at ecomsy.